is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm interviewing Aharon Appelfeld, the author of Blooms of Darkness, a beautiful new novel published by Schocken Books. I read this book before I read any reviews about it at all. I just started reading, and I love this book. I think it is incredibly beautifully written. I know you wrote.
Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. Well, you wrote the book in Hebrew. Is that right? And then translated. It was translated to English.
Yes.
Afterward.
Of course.
I guess I have some questions about the methodology first, and then we can talk a little bit about the book itself. Do you work with the translator at all? Or do you...
Yes, a bit. My English is limited, you know. So I can see some mistakes, misunderstandings.
Right.
But I do not have an idiomatic word for him. So
now,
I cannot intervene too much.
No, I understand. But you're so... You have many languages yourself.
Yes, I speak a lot, all of them badly, except a few.
I think it's probably better. I think having multiple languages gives you an opportunity to see or understand how other people think and feel.
Yes.
But it is hard to... The original language you can never understand completely because... There's, as you said, there's so much about the idioms that become unknown to the person who learned the language later. But you learned when you were first born. Did you you spoke German in the house, as I understand
yes,
it?
Yes, my first language was German.
And then you.
And my grandparents still spoke some Yiddish.
So, but not that much Yiddish in the home.
No, at all. It was German.
Right, because
the surrounding was Ukrainian, Ruthenian Ukrainian.
Right.
The regime was Romanian.
And it was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So there was all those. I've thought about that with my own family on my mother's side, which when they came to the United States said that they were Hungarian. But when I've looked back to try to figure out where they were from, they were really from a part of Poland that was under the rule of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Exactly.
So they thought of themselves as Hungarian.
No, but they were actually Jewish.
They were Jewish.
Yes.
And they probably spoke, you know, multiple languages too.
Of course.
You did. But now in this book, you set the book in an unnamed town. But it's clearly somewhere in the Ukraine and in the area that you.
In the Bukovina, actually, where I was born.
Right, and
Bukovina.
The boy in the book is it pronounced Hugo?
Hugo.
In English.
Hugo.
In English.
In English, you will say Hugo. Yes.
Right, and he's 11 years old. His father's been taken away. This is must be about 1943, I think.
Somewhere, between 2 and 3, yes.
Right.
But this is not, it's fiction.
I understand that. But
it has a lot of autobiographical, you know, parts, but actually it's fiction.
Right, and I'm very interested in the way that I think fiction is often mistaken for memoir by readers. So when they read books, their first impulse is to try to figure out what is literally true. And in a lot of ways, I think from a reader's point of view, it shouldn't matter at all. It is a novel.
Of course.
But people,
because fiction is the truth.
Exactly.
Not the chronology. Chronology is not the truth.
Exactly. So that this is when I read this, I'm thinking about the feelings that this boy has and trying to understand what it would be like to be 11 years old, going through the events. The world outside of his family, he doesn't really understand. All these things are happening to him, and he's trying to process. trying to understand what's going on. And he's torn away from his family. His father is taken away by the Germans. His mother has to go into hiding. We never know what happens to her, although until much later.
Yes, we know what happened to the Jews.
Exactly.
So
it seems that this novel is an attempt to try to understand or convey what it's like to be kind of shut away from all of these events and still trying to grow up as a child.
Yes. It's how to grow up Jewish in Europe.
In a terrible
time. How to grow up a Jewish child in Europe. Most of my generation, children of my generation, disappeared.
Correct.
So, it's how to grow up, as a child, with so many strange experiences.
Yeah, I was struck by the fact that as just for people who don't know the story, he's when his mother brings him to be taken care of by her best friend, who is a prostitute in a brothel.
Yes.
And he spends upwards of 2 years in her closet.
Yes.
In her room. He gets to come out of her room when the Germans aren't there. And I thought it was sort of taking him into this other world, a place where he had no bearings whatsoever.
Yes.
And he lived completely in himself and with this woman who was pretty foreign to him because she's not Jewish, she's Catholic, and she's a prostitute, so he really doesn't understand her at all initially. But it seems that he forgets everything, and then he remembers everything. So that, I love the scenes where literally his mother talks to him, his friends talk to him, early on. I think probably later they don't come around as much. But the way you wrote it, I thought was very interesting in that he doesn't draw a distinction between their fantasy and reality. That
it's true. In this age, fantasy, 11, especially in such a situation, you cannot draw a line between fantasy and reality.
And especially in that place where he is taken away from reality.
Yes.
That is his reality. That his imagination is all he has.
Of course.
But he also, it was so interesting also that he stopped. He didn't read the way his mother had wanted him to. He promised that he would read. He promised he would do math problems. He was obviously a smart kid from a very well-educated family. His parents were both pharmacists.
Yes.
They're kind of intelligentsia.
Yes.
But he can't do all of those things.
He is distracted.
Right.
He's distracted. He has a lot of fears. He thinks a lot. He cannot read because he's preoccupied with himself.
It's an amazing idea, too, to imagine simply sitting and being by yourself for those long periods of time.
Yes.
And you enter another, a kind of different state. It's almost like being in a state of meditation, but without anybody to tell you how to do it. So he doesn't have any rules to follow.
It's a good word, meditation. It's a good word for it, yes.
Yeah, but it also puts him, it gives you as the writer a chance to enter that state as well.
Yes.
And so it's all told in the first person. It's all told in the present tense.
Yes.
It's absolutely.
It's written in the first person, but it's not autobiographical.
No, I think that's important. But just in terms of the telling, it becomes almost Buddhist in that you're in the moment. There is no there's no place else than where you are in your place. The spatial orientation is with him in his mind, and that's all that he really has, except for this woman Marina, who's becomes his everything, because she's his protector.
She becomes his mother, his friend, his lover. She becomes everything, you know.
I know,
so
it's amazing.
A totality.
Right, because she is everything to him. If she doesn't exist, he doesn't exist.
Yes.
And when she goes away at one point, you felt the fear that he felt at that point, the terror. You know, this is an exhausting psychological experience, I think, in many ways. And of course, you know, I never really want to give away the end of the story, so I won't really talk about what happens.
Yes.
But it becomes more complicated as the war comes to a close.
Yes,
it's not only hopeful and positive; it's also again tragic and sad. It's never good for him.
No, it's never good, but even in darkness, even in this darkness, there are moments of light.
Yes.
Just, you know, some light, the memory when he speaks with his parents, with his friends, the moments when he is close to Mariana and loves her. There are moments, and they elevate him.
Well, and also there is that moment when he meets this. There's a character I didn't quite understand so well, but another one of the prostitutes in the brothel, who's young and cast almost as if she was a child, because she's small, she could be mistaken for a child, and she befriends him. They have a relationship. That I thought. So it's not unrelentingly all darkness by any means.
Yes.
But it is. It's so. I noticed this in one interview you did. It must have been a long time ago. You talked about how you were disoriented. After the war, and I felt like that word was very applicable to Hugo.
Disorientation.
Yes, and that he
disorientation.
It's almost like that every single aspect of his being and of his experience is turned in a way so that history is broken, and his being is taken out of context.
Yes,
so he can't figure out who he is. Then, of course, at the end. It's somewhat complicated as well because, the war, and I thought that was also very profound that, you know, I have this sort of imaginary idea of what it would have been like at the end of the war, and I think partially by the, maybe by movie images or television images, you know, you have an idea of the way things were, but for you in this book, at the end of the war, there isn't really any sense of something changing radically. He's freed of the fear of the Nazis because they're gone, but he's simply then in this place of not knowing. And really, it doesn't resolve for him because there's almost the characters. The other refugees that you have, who I assume those are all also mostly Jews who came out of hiding, who had been
only Jews. Only Jews, you know.
At the end of the book.
Yes.
Yeah, and they
all
they seem almost like shadows. That they're,
exactly. They have lost their personality.
Right.
They came out from the camps, from the woods. and they are a bit like, as you said, a bit like shadows. Yes, totally disorientated.
Right. And they almost they don't know what to say. They don't know
won't
how to
know what
be.
to say, but they have a feeling that they should be together. That they should help each other.
Right, and then you have that wonderful woman who feeds them because she feels like she, and she can't go to sleep, she has to feed them.
Yes.
It's almost a way for her to come back to life.
Yes. She became the mother, this young woman became the mother of this bunch of Jews.
Right.
Yes.
And then it sort of ends where we really don't know what happens next. Do you when you write a book like this, do you feel obviously it takes a long time. Do you then become wrapped up in the character? You know, do you think about what happens to him afterwards?
No, I am dealing with a period. The center of the period is in the closet. He's in the closet for 2 years. So this is the center of the novel. A bit before, a bit of after, but the center is the closet. The center is Mariana. Then other people came in, but otherwise, it became autobiographical. You know what happened to me. I came to Israel after the war and so on.
Right. So you want to draw the line between the fiction and the
Yes,
autobiographical.
of course, of course.
So
Because autobiography has limit, it has limitations. You can only tell things what happened to you in an autobiographical world. In fiction, you are free. You are free to tell what's necessary to be told. See?
yes. No, and so have you ever felt have you always felt that fiction was what you wanted to write?
Yes. Because I grew up in fantasy. My years, I left my home when I was 8.5 years old. And then I was separated. My mother was killed, and I was separated from my father. And then I have been adopted by a group of criminals in the woods. And they were my school, actually.
This was during the war.
During the war,
Yeah.
you see. But nonetheless, I was a child. And even it was a very practical moment, you know, to be with a group of criminals means you have to help to do your best to survive. Otherwise, they will kill you. Even they never knew that I'm Jewish.
Oh, so they were not themselves Jews in hiding.
No,
Oh.
you are Ukrainians, really, really criminals. So I
So,
was with them.
and so they
So
taught
this
you.
was a world of reality,
Yeah.
very much reality, but actually it was fantasy. It was not reality. I came from a good home, from affluent Jewish intelligent home, and suddenly I'm with no mother, with no father, just criminals. And I have to adopt myself to them. This is one side. The other side was, it was fantasy. And every night I dreamt that they will come back and pick me up.
Well,
So
it must have been, I just think, incredible.
I have experienced duality. Reality from one side, dream from the other.
Right. So which do you like?
I'm a dreamer.
Right. So all the time that you were with these criminals in the woods in the Ukraine.
Yes.
You're dreaming of the other life, the other world.
Yeah, of course. My parents will come. I knew that my mother was killed, but I've never accepted this fact.
Right.
I was sure she would come back and pick me up.
So how long did you stay with these people?
For 2 years.
And so at that age, 8 to 10 years old, no reading and no writing. It was just survival.
Yeah, just survival, pure survival.
So, and would that mean that you're essentially a self-taught writer?
Yes, if you wish, but then I came to Israel. I've learned Hebrew.
And you write
Hebrew became a language that I master.
And you write in Hebrew now?
Only in Hebrew, yes.
And
this
even though that's
language.
it's not your... Did you didn't learn Hebrew when you were young.
No, no. I'm coming from a assimilated Jewish family,
right.
You know.
So you would if the war hadn't happened, would you have been bar mitzvahed, or no?
I don't think, you know. This was not, no.
Right. Yeah. So no Hebrew at all. So in fact, you write in a language that is adopted.
Adopted, and it's a language that I mastered, you know. Because Hebrew, as you know, has many layers.
No, it's very complicated. It's just
the ancient layer, the medieval layer. So it has many layers: Talmudic layer, Midrashic layer. You know, many, many layers. So it was from one side very difficult. But then it became a joy for me because this language came out finally to be very good to tell my experiences because it's a minimalistic language.
Mm.
Less is more.
Right, which is so almost, would you say, imagist kind of?
Yes.
Yes.
Less is more. Don't speak. Say just the essence. The essential, you see. So this is a language, effectual language, without ornamentics. It's not, you know, fancy words.
Right.
Just to the point.
Does Hebrew absorb words from other languages at all, or does it not do that?
It's a Semitic language. All the languages I knew before, you know, were European languages. And this is a Semitic language.
Right, so very different.
And essentially the biblical language, you know. No adjectives in the Bible. No adjectives.
Right, just telling.
No external matters. No, we do not know if Abraham was tall, was he bald, what kind, you know, we do not know of the externals, we do not know nothing.
Right.
We know something about his soul.
Right, in that way it is more of a language of spirit and of,
yes.
of
so
ideas.
It's a factual language, you know, it's only facts, not ornamentics. No, you know, fancy words.
So is Hebrew also your preferred language to speak in? As well
it's
as
my first written language. I finished at home my first grade. You see, I finished at home my first grade. Then I came to Israel. I learned Hebrew. And later I became professor of Hebrew literature. And then I became a writer.
And this, how many books have you written? It's many books.
I've written 40 books.
Right. Are you...
It means it includes short stories, novellas, novels, dramatic pieces and essays.
I remember, I think the first book of yours that I remember is Bädenheim, 1939.
Yes, this was my first book that came out in America, but not my first book.
Right.
Well, my first book was a collection of short stories.
And do you still write short stories or just novels now?
Yes, but now I'm more preoccupied with novels, with full novels. I'm preoccupied with essays. Yes.
And what are you working on something right now?
Always, a writer should write. Otherwise, he's not a writer.
Another novel.
Otherwise, he's a professor.
And there are probably more professors than there are writers.
Right. A writer should write. You
yeah.
know.
Are you writing another novel now?
Yes. You see, I'm writing a novel and leaving it for 2-3 years in my drawer. Yes. And then I'm coming back to it.
So you'll rewrite
so
it.
So there are, in stock, there are another novels that they have to be finished.
And is this the next one also about the same period, or is it something different?
It's about, yes, it's not exactly the same. It is years before the Holocaust. Hmm. Jewish life before the Holocaust.
I think that's a period that probably we would like to hear from you about, because I think that you write so beautifully about people and their meaning. I think that's really what I would take away from this book, that it is, and maybe your other work, it's that you capture the soul of human beings, and that,
yes,
I think, is a beautiful
yes.
thing.
I'm writing about human beings, yes, because my interests are human beings. And I've written a lot, as you can imagine, not only about Jewish people. I've written, of course, the center are Jewish people, but the periphery, in the periphery, there are a lot of non-Jewish people.
Well, yeah.
That I came to know during the war and before the war.
Right, and in this book, in fact, most of the characters that we see are non-Jewish.
Of course.
So, but all portrayed very, I think, very evocatively. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a real pleasure, and I really enjoyed.
Thank you, David. When are you coming to Israel? Have you been in Israel?
I've never been to Israel. It's something.
Is it not high time to come?
It is high time. It's always high time. And when I come, I will definitely call you.
Please, please.
I would love
give me
to.
A note.
It would be nice to meet you in person.
And to have a small walk with me in a talk.
That I would like very much.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I've had the great pleasure of interviewing Aharon Appelfeld, the author of Blooms of Darkness, a novel published by Schocken Books.